The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, I am delighted to say that I'm joined in studio by the journalist Michael Moynihan, and I hold in my hand his new book, More Than a Game, The GAA and Where It's Going. Congratulations, Michael.
Thank you, Kieran.
In terms of, there's a few specific bits and pieces in the book I want to ask you about, but in terms of trying to understand where the association is going, and you acknowledge this right at the outset, you have to try and understand where it is today or what it is today. It's actually kind of a complicated question.
Yeah, I mean, I would go back to the 1930s when there was a saying in Hollywood that making a film was so complicated only six people could really get the whole equation in their heads. And I think the GA is a little bit like that. They're so big, so sprawling. What does it mean to you? What does it mean to me? I did try to hunt that down with people by asking them, was it for elite sport? Was it for participation, say, with kids? Is it a real estate company like McDonald's with thousands of premises? Or is it now a media company and platform? Is it all of those things? Is it some of those things? And I'll be honest, I'm no closer to an answer even now. But I would say that going by what people said, participation is the big engine, and it's what everything revolves around.
Yeah, Tom Ryan, the Irish juror, he talks about that as well. But you were kind of surprised at how he talked about the association and what it was.
Yeah, he's like Tom, I think would be regarded generally as a safe pair of hands, as a very steady influence. But, you know, I was surprised by how radical he was willing to be, willing to entertain thoughts of maybe bring the games down to 13 a side, which I think will...
I had to laugh when I read that. But we used to play, obviously in Kilkenny, if you were playing a club football match, they were often 11 a side we played. I'm not sure that was sanctioned by the GAA. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, to be fair, for an organisation that's always characterised as being very conservative, in various parts of the country, the playing numbers are adjusted to suit the circumstances and demographics. But I think as a statement of possibility about the games in the future, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And so listen, it's focused very much on, you know, the future, what it might look like, and there's discussions around centres of excellence, the Irish language and refereeing and everything else. GAA Go, obviously, and all of that gets more than one mention. But you mentioned, say, there, the issues in different parts of the country and having to cut your cloth to a degree. And you get into that relatively early as well. And Daragh Kinéada talks about Anguialtacht and Dangan kind of combining maybe underage and it not happening. And you cite as well Nicky Brennan in a previous book, GAA-nomics, that you wrote. And he talked about, you know, the possibility at some point in the future, you know, of his own club and Conaghy Shamrocks disappearing. Yeah. And it's just interesting because I don't know if you know, like Conaghy at the moment have kids now playing down, you know, they've under sixes and sevens teams and they've this huge investment and they've ball walls and astroturf and floodlights. And yet you do have a real existential threat in some parts of the country. Yeah. So how big a challenge do you imagine that is?
Well, I mean, you tie it to, because the GAA always reflects the country of the time, there is a kind of an eastward pull of population. So you have the situation where you have clubs in Dublin which are creaking with numbers but don't have fields. And then you have places on the western seaboard which have magnificent three pitches overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, but they can't fill an under-12 team. Mm. I mean, the classic example for me that Pat Spillane gave was that an area, I think from Kenmare to Sneem and back up the mountains, equivalent to the size of Louth, cannot field a 15-player minor team between the four or five clubs. So obviously one size doesn't fit all. And I think the GAA is going to have to be very creative in terms of competition, which is one thing, but also in terms of looking at some clubs and determining, really, is this club viable? And that's a harsh thing. I think Nicky said that time for GAA Economics, he said that might be a reality for us, a reality that I will address by crying for a week.
Yeah.
And that's not something to associate with Nicky, but that's how people feel about their clubs. And, you know, there are plenty of places around this country which would be seriously deficient if their GAA club folded. But that might be the harsh reality a lot of them are facing.
Yeah, I wonder as well, did COVID not provide a stay of execution, but rather a release valve for some of those clubs like Conaghy, that it's within commuting distance to Dublin. You see that reflected in house prices on the East Coast, kind of they've increased in further away from Dublin because of the 2 or 3 day working week.
Yeah.
And that's kind of breathed some life back into those clubs.
Yeah, I touched on that. I have a chapter on how two really small clubs in Cork amalgamated pretty painlessly, But the economics always butts in. The managed sportive pointed out they're within commuting distance of Limerick and Cork.
Mm.
So that's handy because if you are, as you say, moving out and you want somewhere more rural, more space, that's available to you. Absolutely, your point about COVID did give a boost to clubs with people coming back, say, from college.
Yeah.
And being able to populate teams because they weren't in Dublin or Cork or Galway or wherever you're having yourself. But that whole commuting piece, the GAA is going to reflect that because you have more people working from home. So is that going to be of benefit? It might be in 5, 10, 15 years' time when their kids come through. And that's the other big consideration always with housing.
Yes.
Is that there's always a lag between even that showing with the underage teams and then further on with the adult teams. And for a lot of clubs, you can see that they're trying to hang in there so that a nearby housing estate will eventually populate the teams again.
When I describe it though as an existential threat, I mean, it is to the GAA more so than it is to other associations that are not as rooted in place.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it's existential. Yeah. It's the my country is Kiltartan's cross view of the world.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. As you say, the GAA is really embedded and the community aspect is not just a flag that's flown the odd time. It is very much intrinsically part of the GAA. But that means there's more to lose. Now, as you know well, if you and I want to put a junior soccer team together with our pals, if we have enough friends and we have an
available, you can do it.
That's there. And that is great. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But the difference is traditionally a GAA club has, you know, an underage section. It maybe has an offshoot in ladies football and camogie, of which more later. And there's a whole accompanying superstructure, if you like, that goes with that. And all of that architecture will go then if a club goes.
Is the GAA an amateur organisation?
I suppose the smart answer sometimes is not a very professional organisation. Well, it's not a pay-for-play organisation.
Mm.
It's a highly professional organisation. But I would have to say, as someone who's, you know, been a GAA member all my life, it's also an extremely hypocritical organisation.
Yeah.
I mean, the blink or the winking about payments to managers in particular is a huge issue. And when you're talking about existential threats, I think that's an existential threat in the truest sense, because it's almost a philosophical one, because you're actually eating away at what the core of the GAA is. And if the GAA isn't about money, and it isn't really, it's about sustaining itself and resources, etc. But it's you can't really say it's about money. So what is it about? It's about something bigger than just a game. It's more than a game, to coin a phrase. But if you are paying managers under the table illegally, that is the kind of threat that is very difficult to stave off.
Do you welcome the fact that Jarlath Byrne seems to at least be acknowledging this more openly than his predecessors?
Yeah, I mean, writing the book, it was really noticeable that nobody questioned the fact that there are illegal payments to managers.
Yeah.
The extent, nobody said, how dare you even stay in the name of the GAA? Everyone acknowledged
it. The ostrich has removed his head from the sand.
And I welcome the fact that Jarlath is saying, look, we have to do something with this. But here's what happens when you try and retrofit the legislation to fit the crime. Because this talk of a €20,000 stipend, which, by the way, would seriously underpay.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's a lot of managers appalled at that.
So how dare you, but for all the wrong reasons. But obviously you're going to introduce employment law.
So yes.
If I take you on to manage the Kilkenny Hurlers, €20,000, and you lose the first two league games and they're not very happy in Kilkenny, what's going to happen then? Am I going to have to fire you, as the county board chairman?
Yeah.
Are you going to waive your contract in my face? Are Cork going to say, Kieran, you're doing such a great job, we want you to come and manage our team, pay you more money? Once you start getting into employment, you only have to look at professional sport, the issue with financial fair play, payments under the counter, all of that kind of stuff. That's the kind of vista you're opening. And to a certain extent, the GAA has drawn that on itself because that wasn't addressed earlier on, this whole payments for managers.
Yeah. Well, listen, it is at least being talked about, but it's so hard to get a sense of where we might end up, which is part of the value of the book as well, as trying to inform people about that direction of travel. The split season as well gets mentioned, you know, in a couple of different guises, but I thought one of them was interesting, and it was about, and it actually kind of overlapped with another book as well on interviews. It was, both of them were about the story or the space to tell stories.
Yeah.
And this being one of the shortcomings in the association.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of benefits, obviously. It has some shortcomings. You know, you'll hear managers complain that it's so compressed. If one guy twists his ankle, he might miss three games.
Sure. I actually was only talking to someone in here the other day, before speaking to you about an hour ago about this. And, yeah. You know, the soft tissue injury, the class, you might miss one game, miss the entire championship now.
That's the class. But certainly in terms of developing a narrative around the games, to sell the games, anathema though that is to some GA people, you have to realise if you're a GA person, you're in competition with other sports. What sells the sport? The players sell the sport. With all due respect to our administrators, great people that they are, managers, referees, etc., people want to see the players. And if you've got such a compressed space of time in which control freak managers will not let the players out to speak, then nobody ever gets to know who those guys are. Like, if you've got a small child at home who wants to imitate David Clifford or Patrick Horgan, what they're not going to say is, I'm sure they're very interesting people, but because the manager doesn't want them to speak, I don't know who they are. Yeah. They're not going to do that. They're going to watch, you know, players in other sports who are available and who are immediately available. And the fact that they're playing professional sports actually is not even an argument, because if the GAA isn't about the money, it's about the game. And everyone should be involved in promoting and pushing the game as much as they can.
But there's so many... There's so much nonsense around interviews in the GAA, and I know you talk about Joe Canning's interview in 2012, and the only people kind of not surprised by what he had to say were everyone in Kilkenny, who was so used to Henry being lippy on the pitch. I mean, he's still at it on the sideline. Yeah. Anyway, but the other thing is this myth of the article being pinned up on the dressing room wall. You know, don't create a hostage to fortune.
Yeah, I mean, this is fantastic, because of course the other thing you hear from managers, we don't pay any attention to the outside noise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you know, the contradictions are everywhere.
And, right? and then it's, what do you think of that, Joe Brawley?
Yeah, we were written off by everyone coming up there, and you have to say sometimes, lads, you were hot favourites. Who was writing off? I think the wider question about that is, you know, you don't get to know who the players are. They're not allowed to speak. Some of them will still bring up this Joe Canning interview, will conveniently forget the dozens of players who have given interviews, who have gone out to give man of the match performances in all Ireland finals, Munster finals, Leinster finals, whatever you have in yourself, but it's convenient for them to hang their opposition to it. Now, I understand that speaking to journalists is not a hurler or a footballer's top priority or great interest. I understand that completely. But I'm afraid if you enlist, you must drill. Yeah. That's part of it.
But just, there's some great characters. You only look at this station. Tommy Wall. Yeah. Tommy's a great character. Yeah. And I've known Tommy since we did what were their cool camps today. They were summer camps when we were kids.
Yeah.
Since we were about 8 years old, I've known him. And he's always been a great character. Yeah. And he was completely silent, effectively, during his entire playing career.
Exactly.
You know, and it's actually criminal in a way, looking back. You think, how much mileage, how much he would have dispelled the whole Stepford Wives thing about Kilkenny had he just been let to talk.
Hang on a second. you're saying for a second that's not true. But he's a classic example, because he must be one of the most popular GAA people of all time. I was at the launch of Padraig Maher's book in Thurles, and when he walked in, slightly delayed but made it on time, I announced him from the stage. He brought the host down.
Yeah.
The popularity, people warmed to him. And if you're telling me that if he'd been allowed out a little bit while he was playing, that he wouldn't have kindled far more interest in hurling, a game which always needs promotion, you know, it's nonsense. He would have been absolutely fantastic. You only have to look around at the panels of intercounty players. By definition, they have had so many different experiences that there must be fantastic stories there, which you will never hear.
Why don't more people play hurling?
Well, there's a new book out which will... There's a few complicated...
I think that's quite literally the title of one of the chapters, is it?
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, something that, again, the GAA is kind of uncomfortable with is the fact that there are many counties which do not so much promote hurling, but, in the words of a friend of mine, have hurling repression officers. People who will actually try and stamp out hurling, because those counties would prefer to be mid-table mediocrity in Gaelic football as opposed to just giving people a chance to participate in hurling. Mm. And I would feel a huge sympathy for someone like Willie Maher, who's doing his best as the National Hurling Development Officer.
Yeah.
Because when you compare the resources and energy that was put into revitalising Gaelic football under Jim Gavin and the real urgency the GAA attached to that, and, you know, something that is quite close to complacency and a laissez-faire attitude to hurling, I think that goes a long way to explaining your question.
Can the hurling counties and people in those counties themselves, and, you know, I probably count both of us in this regard, can be slightly gatekeeperish, though, about the game? And there's a bit of, I mean, the way in which the game is talked about as well, sometimes, you know, I get a bit of ire listening to it. You know, this is hurling. Well, it's football is for strongmen, but hurling is for heroes type stuff.
Well, speaking as a man who was involved in two documentaries that I have at RT, it was very interesting that some of the hurling talk in general can be a bit Lenny Riefenstahl. You know,
yes.
I'm looking into the soul of...
But it also makes it seem like it's almost impossible. We couldn't possibly play that game. Look at the way they talk about it.
Yeah, look at the messaging. Like, even for that hurling documentary, I remember Gerard Lochnan saying, well, if you're 6 years of age and you haven't played 10,000 hours of hurling, you're in trouble. And then we had Sean O'Gahalpin kind of disappointed. But certainly, that's the negative side of saying this is the greatest game.
Mm.
Because there always is a sense of, you're from County X, what would you know about it?
Yeah.
And you know yourself, there are plenty of people in Kilkenny and Cork and Tip and Waterford who are quite happy to say that. But as against that, I think a certain amount of, not triumphalism, but cheerleading is understandable given, and I'll put this carefully, given what we were subjected to in Gaelic football for 5 to 10 years and were told it was unbelievable entertainment as well.
Listen, all of this is explored in much more detail and a whole lot more besides. I listed some of the issues there as well. We didn't even get into the things like naming rights and what have you, but it's all in the book, More Than a Game, the GAA and Where It's Going by Michael Moynihan. Michael, good to talk to you.
Pleasure as always, Kieran.
Thanks a million for coming in to us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.